Ladies and gentlemen, roll up, roll up, roll up. There's no need to suffer anymore at the hands of hackers. There's no need to suffer data breaches, getting doxxed or cyber warred. Because let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we got a fix for you. Risky Biz, genuine bona fide snake oil. Weak creds? Snake oil them. Default creds? Snake oil them. Stuxnets in your ICSs? Snake oil them. Shamoons in your XPs? Snake oil M2. All you need is a little snake oil. Risky Biz, genuine bona fide snake oil.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this, the first ever Snake Oilers podcast from Risky.biz. I'm Patrick Gray. And yeah, if this is your first time tuning in to Risky Business, this isn't actually the weekly show. This is something new that we're doing here on the site. We'll be doing this 4 or 5 times a year. The idea is we get a handful of vendors together and they try to sell you some stuff. We like to keep things transparent on Risky.biz, so I will tell you that all of the vendors who are participating are paid to be here. And yeah, the idea behind this whole thing is so that InfoSec buyers can actually hear a bunch of 10-minute pitches without having to go to lunch with a whole bunch of salespeople with giant shiny teeth who don't really understand what they're selling. And yeah, these are pitches from people who actually get the technology. And you know what? Even if you're not a technology buyer, you'd probably still find a lot of this interesting. It's good to know how vendors are slicing and dicing some of the challenges we all face in security today. So we will be hearing from a bunch of vendors in this first edition. First up, we're chatting with Exabeam about its SIEM play. Their whole goal is to radically upset the SIEM market. And as you'll hear, they're pretty confident that if you're an ArcSight or Splunk customer, they can save you what can best be described as a buttload of money. So that is nice. Then we're chatting to Risky Business stalwart sponsor Senetas. They have released their 100 gigabit per second full line rate encryptor. Yeah, that is a lot of gigabits. And Senetas CTO Julian Fay will tell you why you shouldn't be relying on Babby's first encryption capabilities that the router manufacturers are trying to sell you. Then we're going to hear from Collide, who make an awesome EDR solution based on OS Query. Now, OS Query is open source. It's actually like a Facebook spinoff, and that is super cool stuff. And then finally, we're going to hear from Senrio, who recently did one of our Soapbox podcasts with us. And they'll be giving you a nice, succinct pitch for their IoT security software. They make two lines of products. They can run a sensor for you on your network to detect IoT devices gone bad, and they can also make tools for IoT manufacturers who can then use those tools to make sure their devices are operating okay in the field. Now, if you're not interested in one or the other, just skip ahead to the next interview. There's plenty of diversity in this week's show, so you're sure to be interested in at least one or two of these pitches. Oh, and if you're a vendor and you like the idea of pitching, like, you know, upwards of 16,000 InfoSec people on your products, do get in touch with sales@risky.biz, because we're doing another one of these in late June. But yeah, let's get into it now with our first snake oil peddler, Rick Karcher of Exabeam. Exabeam announced a whole bunch of new product at RSA this year, but long story short, they're selling some SIEM gear that they think is cheaper and more effective than the current generation of SIEMs like Splunk and ArcSight. So joining us now is Rick Karcher of Exabeam, and I'll start off by asking him the question I'll be asking everyone today. Rick, what would you like to sell us today?
Well, I'm selling you Exabeam, and Exabeam is in the SIEM market. SIEM is where Splunk, HP ArcSight, and QRadar and others play. Yeah, the Exabeam platform helps you collect your logs, analyze them to find out threats, and then help you respond in an automatic way.
Okay, so this is a fairly standard SIEM play so far. What is the differentiator? Why should Risky Business listeners be interested in your SIEM versus any one of those other SIEMs you just named?
Sure thing. So we think that the SIEM market is just completely broken. If you look at these SIEM players, you know, these guys started before Hadoop, they started before Facebook, heck, they all started before the iPhone. So they're going after a problem that doesn't exist today, and none of them really solved the problem we have today.
And what is that problem that you're solving?
Yeah, the problem today is people simply aren't able to detect the kind of threats, and so you read about breach after breach. Every one of these companies that gets breached had a SIEM in place, and it just didn't help. And the SIEMs have three big problems. I can talk about those and how we fix them.
Okay, shoot, man. Tell me what the big three problems with SIEM are, because I can think of a list of about 20, but, you know, if we want to start with the top three, let's start there.
Well, there are more, but I think there are three big ones that jump out. The first is the SIEMs have a data problem, and that is every one of these guys charges you by the byte. They charge you for the amount of data you store. So it means that every company you talk to is now storing 10 times as much data as they did when they bought the product. And every time they want to store a little bit more, the vendor shows up and tries to bill them for a little bit more. So they simply have this conflict where they can't store the data they want to store because it's too expensive.
So you think fundamentally just the revenue model in the industry as is just wrong?
It's completely flipped. The value is not in data storage and search, but that's where the revenue model is for SIEM today.
Okay, so revenue model, problem number one. Problem number two is?
Problem number two is intelligence. All of these SIEMs work on correlation rules, which require you to figure out ahead of time and guess what kind of attacks you're looking for. Totally doesn't make sense today when the attacks morph and change all the time. So you need some way to be able to detect things like lateral movement, credential switches, and be able to tie different bits of identity together. And none of the SIEMs do this very well.
So how do you do that? I mean, if it's something that you say you guys can do, why is it that no one else is doing it? Is there some special sauce here?
Yeah, the world has changed. So, you know, I came from a company, I came from ArcSight. I was the head of product marketing at ArcSight. And, you know, the stuff we had back then, which was state of the art, is just, Neanderthal today. It doesn't work. It doesn't work the way people do it today. So today everyone uses behavioral analytics. We use machine learning. And, we use automatic baselining for every user to figure out what normal behavior looks like. And then we use those baselines to figure out when users are doing things that are unusual and risky on a per user basis. And this allows you to detect hacked accounts really easily, and it allows you to find malicious insiders in ways that none of the SIEMs can do. We started there. So we started in the behavioral analytics market. You know, the plan was always to do to SIEM what Palo Alto Networks did to firewalls. And so we started as a UBA, and then we added the rest of the SIEM product. We've deployed more UBAs than the rest of anyone else in the industry. We've done over 150 enterprise-wide production behavioral analytic installations in the last year. So we feel like our product's pretty darn good there, and we have a great stand in terms of intelligence and detection. And so those are the first two problems. You know, the first is data and the license model, and then the second is the intelligence, you know, detection model. And the third one is really around expertise. No one can hire the people they need to run these things, and the SIEMs don't help. They cause more work than they really fix. And so we think there's a lot to be done in terms of automating playbooks and orchestration, and really automate a lot of the work that today is done manually and requires so-called ninjas.
Yeah. Now, we spoke to your founder about that in one of the weekly shows, and it was kind of interesting because, you know, there are companies, SIEM companies, that kind of, you know, they have some playbook stuff, they have some orchestration stuff, but it seems like you've spent a lot of time and effort on the orchestration side simply for that reason, so that you don't need, you know, a consultant in there at $2,400 a day just to figure out how to use the tool, right? Or how to respond to an incident that it's flagged.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you're never going to replace the human. You always want smart humans, but boy, a lot of the stuff that happens in an incident investigation, a lot of the initial work is pretty mundane. You know, trying to track down who did what, trying to see if an email attachment was actually malware, looking at reputation data. You know, these kind of things can take hours. And if you can automate it, you can get all the grunt work out of the way, and then you can take your, you know, precious intelligence human analysts and put them on things where their brains are necessary and not on grunt work.
Now, one thing that I find interesting, actually, and I'll just mention it for you, is that Exabeam started off taking logs from existing clients and sort of like log collection agents, but you kind of figured out that a lot of them sucked. So you've wound up writing your own, which is pretty cool. So that's something for people to maybe think about evaluating. But I'm curious, what's your target market here, Rick? So of the listeners, we've got listeners all across, a million different verticals. Which industries and which sizes of organizations do you feel you best fit? Because SIEMs traditionally, you know, have been for very large businesses with very large budgets. Where do you see yourself playing?
Well, I'll tell you this, our largest customer has 200,000 employees and our smallest customer has 200 employees. So
somewhere in between there then.
Somewhere in between there. It's pretty much anyone who's got sensitive data, needs to do compliance reporting, or needs to monitor, you know, what's happening to that data and what the users are doing. So it's all over the spectrum, kind of any industry, any size. The way we look at this is any customer who's got a SIEM in place and is struggling with the cost of it, particularly around data, capturing data, struggling with the cost, struggling to detect, and is struggling to hire people to manage this stuff, we encourage them to take a look at it. It's a pretty straightforward thing to POC. We're actually, the demand has sort of exploded since we announced this at RSA. So if you know you're currently paying hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to Splunk or ArcSight every year, and you want to drop that cost significantly, drop it by a factor of 10 and take those savings and put them into things like behavioral analytics and automated response and still drop the overall waterline. You know, I encourage you to take a look at Exabeam and give us a call or drop us an email at info@exabeam.com.
Now, interestingly enough, too, you guys are pretty heavily backed by Cisco. Can you explain that arrangement?
Sure. So Cisco was an investor in our last round. It was actually led by Lightspeed Ventures. And Lightspeed, the partner from Lightspeed, is the same guy who did AppDynamics and MuleSoft and Nutanix. He saw this as a very similar kind of business, which was a company doing a next-gen play in an existing market that had gone stale. Nutanix doing it in storage, AppD doing it in application monitoring, and then Exabeam doing it in SIM. Cisco was actually a secondary investor in the round. They're an investor, and we're starting to work on go-to-market partnership with them because they have lots of the things that generate the signals that a product like Exabeam would pull together and provide intelligence across.
Can you think of one particularly interesting deployment, Rick?
Yes. So let me give you one of my early beta customers. This was a customer that followed our path exactly. They already had our UBA to manage users, and they were finding all kinds of interesting things there. They put in our log manager. They were our first beta customer. They were already a Splunk customer. 1 month into the beta trial, the CISO came back and he said, I've already put 30 times the amount of data into Exabeam than my Splunk license allows. And he said, I did it because I can. So because I'm no longer constrained by costs, I put my DNS traffic in, I put my endpoint traffic in, and I'm catching all kinds of things I couldn't see because I didn't have the data. And now they're adding the automated incident responder. So I think it's a great example of someone who started with Exabeam for better detection, and then they added log management and are seeing a dramatically larger amount of data they can manage. And then next they're looking at how do we automate the expertise part and the response part.
And what would you say is the advantage of being able to pull in that volume of data? Does it become unmanageable at that point?
No, you want to keep that data for two reasons, right? One is you may want it for reporting and compliance purposes. So kind of what happens today is customers figure out what's the minimum they can get away with. So how much can I throw away and still, you know, be okay? And we say that doesn't make any sense. Data management is commoditized. Today, it doesn't cost much to capture as much data as you generate. So go ahead and store it. So you might want it. And then two, having all that data makes the analytics work better. Because if I have things like your DNS traffic, I can find certain types of, you know, tunneling and other attacks you might want to see. If I have your endpoint data, I can see things like ransomware start to form. So we say the benefit of having all the data is you can find things you couldn't find otherwise, and it just makes no sense to throw data away simply because your vendor's cost model is not aligned with your own, you know, your own needs.
Okay, Rick Kacha, thank you very much for joining us on this first ever edition of Snake Oilers.
Thanks, Pat. Happy to be there.
That was Rick Karcher of Exabeam there. And when someone's saying they can save you major coin as compared to something like Splunk, well, I reckon that's worth looking into. You can check them out at exabeam.com or email them at info@exabeam.com. Okay, it is time for our second snake oiler now, Julian Fay, the CTO of Senetas. Senetas makes layer 2 encryption equipment, and they have recently released their 100 gigabit per second full line rate encryptor. It is a serious, serious bit of kit, but a lot of you might be tempted to use encryption cards that router manufacturers are, you know, pushing pretty hard these days. But Julian will be explaining why that's a bad idea. Senetas are an Australian company, but they distribute globally via Gemalto SafeNet, so just so you're aware. So Julian Fay, CTO and co-founder of Senetas, what are you selling us today?
So today I'm here to talk about our brand new CN9000 series 100 gigabit per second layer 2 encryptor, which we were very proud to launch at the RSA show in San Francisco just 2 weeks ago.
What is that speed again? Can you just tell me that again?
Sure, that speed again is 100 gigabit per second, true wire speed encryption.
That seems rather fast.
It is very fast. It's certainly a big bump up from the current 10 gigabit per second product that most of our customers are using. But, you know, it's not just the next speed bump in network technology. It really is the evolution of network bandwidth and network connectivity that I think has been driven by the exponential growth in the volume and also the types of data that modern enterprise and cloud customers are using these days.
Now, who is the typical buyer for this particular product? Is it operations? Is it management? I'm guessing it's not development. Who's the typical buyer?
the use cases for 100 gig product are probably a bit more interesting than you might typically at first think. Obviously, the simple one is basically bulk encryption of data center interconnectivity, or DCI as it's known. So the kind of customers or users for that solution would be large enterprises, cloud service providers, data center owners who might offer encrypted connectivity, and indeed the owners of the sort of hyperscale data centers that are offering services, cloud services that are very well known in the public space. So that's probably the simplest one. But the use cases that we're seeing in the market today from conversations with our partners and customers are actually more sophisticated than that. So they include things like campus network environments. And the setting there might be anything from defense to health, to scientific, or even academic, where you have a campus environment within a metropolitan area region, with today's IT infrastructures, where we're just shifting huge amounts of high-quality video around, Internet of Things type traffic, and particularly if you talk about health or science or even education these days, a lot of that traffic is sensitive by nature. So some of these campus networks are putting in point-to-multipoint or multipoint-to-multipoint 100 gig switched connectivity in those campus environments, and they want to make sure it's secure.
And how are they doing that currently?
Well, in many cases, they aren't doing any encryption. If they put in networks that operate at these speeds, then they're probably not encrypting them at all. There are some approaches to encrypting at 100 gigs. So, for example, you can encrypt at what we call layer one in the protocol stack. That's typically described as optical or photonic encryption. So that's the kind of security that might be built into an optical multiplexer, for example. So encrypt traffic across a simple point-to-point optical network. And there are already solutions on the market that address that. But if you want to go beyond that, if you want to actually secure within a one-to-many or a many-to-many type environment running conventional Ethernet, particularly if you're doing aggregation, which is another big area where we're seeing consolidation. So the conventional 10, 1, or even 25 and 40 gigabit sort of lower speed pipes that we're familiar with within our data center enterprise environments are increasingly being bundled up into higher transport speeds that include 100 gig. And there the challenge is how do you secure that traffic end-to-end when it's got a one-to-many relationship? And that's not something you can do by using layer one optical encryption, which is where a solution such as ours can come into play.
So layer one is a competing solution, but do you have any competition in the layer two high-speed encryption space?
Yeah, certainly there are standards such as MACsec, which is a layer two standards-based encryption algorithm, a little bit like the layer two equivalent of IPsec that most of your listeners will be familiar with, that is becoming more commonplace and is being built into some switches or routers from some of the large networking providers. And there are, I believe, a handful of 100 gig MACsec solutions on the market today. Now, MACsec was originally designed as a point-to-point solution, actually for use within local area networks, but its use has been adopted for use in some wide area network connections or across the data centers, for example. In most cases, it requires hop-by-hop encryption. So the idea is that every termination of a physical fiber optic cable, you would be required to decrypt that traffic. It would be in clear within the switch or router, and then it will be encrypted again on the next hop. So you can't actually do full end-to-end encryption across, say, a service provider network with traditional MACsec. You need a proprietary approach or a change to that MACsec standard to allow that. What we've tried to do in this solution is what we've done with all of our current products, and I should probably explain that this new family is built on our CN encryption platform that's currently in use to secure a critical infrastructure in about 40 countries all over the world in defense, government, and enterprise environments. This new platform is entirely functional and fully interoperable with all of those devices. So for those customers who already are encrypting with some of our technology and they simply want to put in a larger, higher capacity trunk, for example, at their hub site, they can simply put one of these in and we'll be able to terminate hundreds of concurrent encrypted sessions coming from other locations all over the world, which are being encrypted with some of our other devices. So you can provide true point-to-multipoint or indeed multipoint-to-multipoint connectivity. And we believe this is actually the only solution on the market that can provide that true multipoint-to-multipoint connectivity.
Now, I'm imagining this equipment costs more than a can of Coke, but I'm also guessing that you have an economic argument in support of why people should buy it. What is that argument?
Sure. Look, there are lots of ways that you can provide encryption or confidentiality across any kind of physical infrastructure. These products are typically categorized as high assurance encryption solutions. But what I mean by that is that they are a purpose-built encryption technology. They are designed to be very physically robust. They have strong anti-tampering mechanisms in the physical appliance itself that prevent somebody breaking into it and stealing encryption keys. They are, as you know, our product family is probably the most highly certified encryption product family on the market. We might take a lot of care to get our products certified by all the major governments all over the world by virtue of the FIPS 140 standard, common criteria, NATO certification, unified comms approved product list for US defense. And all of those certifications require a great deal of in-house testing and assurance of the security inherent in the product from both a physical hardware and also a software perspective. So not everybody needs that level of assurance. The other thing that people may or may not need is guaranteed deterministic performance. So by purpose engineering the encryption in this line of products using silicon technology such as field programmable gate arrays, we can provide guaranteed deterministic performance to our customers for whatever kind of traffic at whatever bandwidth they throw across it. So many traditional encryption solutions, particularly those that are software-based or a lot of the IPsec solutions, deliver variable performance. That means that if you're running a network traffic flow across an infrastructure in the morning, you might achieve a certain bandwidth and a certain latency across the network. In the afternoon, if you turn on multiple video streams, you'll get a very different performance or SLA across that network. And that lack of determinism, that lack of ability to predict how well your network will perform when fully loaded is a real problem in delay or sensitive environments. So that's another feature that we've been able to engineer into this solution. So our typical customers would be those who really need, A, the sort of high assurance trust that comes with those certifications and with the product architecture, as well as that guaranteed deterministic performance.
So this is less of a we can save you money pitch and more of a we are the only ones who can do this pitch.
Yeah, look, I mean, we think it's a very cost-effective solution as well. A lot of the integrated encryption solutions are basically included at an additional cost in part of some other networking equipment, which could be an optical multiplexer, as I said, or it could be a switch or a router. And that's fine. Usually they come with security trade-offs that mean that they're not suitable for certification to this highest level. But also it does completely typically lock you into that single vendor, both for your networking equipment and also for your security equipment. There's no decoupling of those two functions. So if at some point in the future the networking technology changes, you want to move to a new variant of a switch with some new management features, if you're encryption is tied into that platform, you've got to upgrade both the encryption blade and the network switch itself, which is typically going to be very expensive.
There goes your budget, right?
Yeah. Well, we think by decoupling those, not only do you get a better security practice, you also get a network agility benefit, which means that you can you're at liberty to upgrade the networking or switching components of your architecture independently of the security components, which gives you a lot more freedom to take advantage of new technologies that appears without reducing the security in any way. So I think there's a good cost-effective return on investment argument to be made as well.
All righty, Julian Fay, thank you very much.
A pleasure, Patrick. Great to speak to you.
That was Julian Fay there. You can check out Senetas at senetas.com, senetas.com. So, if you want to do network encryption the right way, I would strongly recommend you get in touch with them all for all your layer 2 encryption needs. Okay, it is time to hear from our next snake oiler now. That's Collide. Collide is spelled K-O-L-I-D-E. They're a great new company. They've basically built an EDR product out of an open source tool that was engineered by Facebook. That tool, of course, is OS Query, and Facebook engineered it out of necessity. They needed a stable, a secure endpoint agent that could run on Windows, Linux, and Mac. And nothing like that actually existed, so they built their own. Mike Arpaia, who headed the development of OS Query, wound up working with our next guest, Jason Meller, on engineering a commercial product based on OS Query. So you too can use the EDR software Facebook relies on just by giving Collide a call. K-O-L-I-D-E. Collide's CEO, Jason Meller, joins me now. Jason, what are you selling us today?
Well, Patrick, I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, sling some snake oil. It's very awesome that you're giving us the opportunity to just sort of, you know, load up the podcast with as many marketing terms as, you know, humanly possible. So
fire your silver bullet when ready, okay?
Well, you know, so my name's Jason Meller. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Collide. My other co-founder, Mike Arpaia, is the creator of the open source agent OS Query, which was created at Facebook a few years ago, and it was something that they open sourced to help sort of instrument Mac and Linux platforms specifically. They deployed in hundreds of thousands of systems internally there, and it's been really taken up as you know, the proper way to do this from an open source perspective. So the issue is that, you know, with OS Query, it's an incredible tool. It gives you deep inspection capabilities and instrumentation capabilities on each endpoint. The issue is that Facebook didn't really open source the whole story, right? You know, obviously there's the agent piece. It collects all the great data, but it's really up to you as someone who's using OS Query to figure out how you want to actually configure it. How do you actually look at each individual system and run those queries and then collect the results and aggregate them somewhere useful? And the answer to that today is, you know, there's a few open source projects that can kind of help with that. There's a few things that you can do, like, you know, deploy Chef and Puppet and sort of just kind of slam configuration files out there and sort of deal with that classic problem as you would with any other configuration problem. But the problem really is that that's sometimes just a little bit too much work for, you know, engineering teams and security teams that just, you know, they need something today that just allows them to query their endpoints. So that's kind of where Collide comes in. We're sort of the second half to the OS Query story. We give you a centralized console that allows you to just, from a central location, query your entire OS, you know, your OS Query fleet. So basically, you can ask a question, you know, select star from processes where, you know, process name equals, you know, something that might be malicious. And instead of that going out to one system or, you know, having to aggregate those results in another location, it'll fly out to everything and all the results just come pouring in right into the web app, and you can do additional analysis on top of that, and that's happening in seconds versus without any tooling at all.
All right, so I got to tell you, Jason, you got to get into the proper swing of this, and you got to say that it stops cyber threats, okay? Because it's all bleep, bloop, bleep, host instrumentation, open source. What does it actually do? Why am I buying it? What is it? What is the other equivalent product? What is it replacing for me?
So a lot of people think about this as a capability, right? They want to be able to ask their endpoints questions and get answers. So, you know, when you think about incumbents in the space today, you know, you think about Tanium, you think about other EDR solutions that are out there that basically claim to provide that capability. Here's the rub, though, is that those guys, they are, first of all, they're shipping a proprietary agent. It's completely closed sourced, and you have no idea what you're really putting on there that has direct capacity to really whatever it wants on each endpoint. Now, not to say to kind of like throw FUD out there, like that's something that is absolutely going to happen, but OS Query has been open source for 2 years. It's had hundreds of independent researchers looking at it on a regular basis. And oh, by the way, instead of having marketing mumbo jumbo to talk about ring buffers and, oh, by the way, we got, you know, peer-to-peer at the local segment, and that's like making things a lot faster, it's scaled to Facebook web scale. They rejected those solutions because, you know, they did not scale to the levels that needed to be achieved at companies like Facebook, and Facebook specifically. So from my perspective, you know, for if you're a CISO today, the first question that you need to ask yourself is, do I even have that capability today? Can I ask a question of my endpoints, of my servers, and actually get a competent answer within seconds? And the answer, if the answer is yes, but on Windows only, then I think you really should take a look at this. OS Query today runs on Mac OS, Linux, and Windows. They allow you to pull data in very deep ways across all of those platforms. And, you know, why not have that normalization, that ability to take one piece of intelligence and codify it in one single question and get the answers across your entire fleet?
What sort of organizations should be buying this?
So, you know, we're seeing two types of organizations get really excited about Collide and OS Query. The first is sort of your classic, you know, highly budgeted sort of security team. You know, they recognize they need this capability. They already have a lot of IT security investments. Instead of like, you know, some of these existing solutions where we try to replace every product that you've ever bought over and over again, What we're trying to do is we're trying to provide a data collection capability that slips in easily and integrates with those existing investments. So if you're already running Splunk, or maybe you are on the open source train and you're running, you know, the entire Elk stack, and you just need data to really feed that existing analysis engine, or you need something for your SIM and you already have alerting and, you know, security or, you know, response orchestration after that, OS Query and Collide together provide the data that's necessary to power those solutions to make them more valuable to you. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, if you're a much smaller organization, let's say you're a startup like we are, or you know, you're 100 or 200, you know, endpoints and client workstations, and you need a tool that not only can solve a lot of sort of high-end security, you know, inquiries that you may have, but are also just demonstrating the capacity to really understand and present the types of, like, you know, compliance and IT security like data that you need. I mean, you got to think about the type of political capital necessary to deploy a single agent across everything at Facebook. It meant that every team needed to be able to use this thing to get value. And as a result of that level of feature development in OS Query itself, people just have the ability to, you know, get data for their IT teams, or people that are looking at a lot of different compliance metrics, and people that, you know, just need to understand, you know, are the root disks encrypted across all of my Macs and in my enterprise? If you can't answer that question today with the tools that you have today, you should definitely take a look at what we're selling.
So really what you're trying to do here is to own IDR across all platforms. The main hook in the pitch seems to be, well, if it's good enough for Facebook, it's good enough for you. Have I got that about right?
I mean, we definitely talk about that a lot. And I think while, you know, you can put it that way, it's definitely true. I mean, not everybody's going to be Facebook, right? You know, we're talking huge company. They're running, you know, probably an order of magnitude servers, even, you know, against some of the Fortune 500 out there. But we're seeing this fundamental paradigm shift where people need inspection on servers, and servers run Linux. And oh, by the way, really no one has a first class agent story for Linux. No one has the ability to say that they are protecting the performance of this very sort of resource constrained machines in a way that OS Query does, in a way that they can do on, you know, production machines that are running things that Facebook runs today. So yeah,
because it is very lightweight as well, isn't it? OS Query is very lightweight. That's one of the requirements. That was one of the requirements as set by Facebook.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about people at Facebook and other places that are now running this at scale. I mean, there's some of these people, they wrote parts of the Linux kernel. I mean, they care very deeply about every single CPU cycle that this thing is using. And that was the sort of environment in which OS Query was born. So from my perspective, you know, if you could talk about ring buffers and peer-to-peer, whatever you want all day long, you know, that's really the true test. And, you know, OS Query and Collide together use an HTTP long polling model to, you know, actually communicate the data across. And people know how to scale HTTP traffic. It makes a lot of sense for them. It makes a lot of sense. And it's very easy to scale to the hundreds of thousands of systems that we're seeing now at multiple organizations.
Jason Mellor, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so there you go. You can make OS Query easy with Collide. They are spelled a bit funny, as I mentioned. It's K-O-L-I-D-E, so K-O-L-I-D-E.com. Okay, it is time for our final snake oiler today, Jamison Utter, the VP of Field Operations with Senrio. Senrio makes some super, super cool stuff. Basically, if you're operating an IoT-heavy environment, you really want to take a look at their stuff. So yeah, you can drop one of their sensors on your network, and then you'll know when your IoTs are going a little bit sideways, or even your control systems are going a bit sideways. So that's very nice, and it's especially useful in hospitals. You know, they don't do DPI or anything like that, so they're super HIPAA-friendly. The other thing they do is make developer tools for IoT manufacturers. If you want to be able to monitor the performance and security of an embedded device while it's in the field, you should check out Senrio Trace. It is actually really, really, really cool stuff, that. And yeah, if you want to hear, like, in-depth more about this tech, we recorded what we call one of our Soapbox podcasts with these guys and published that a few weeks ago. You can find that by going to risky.biz/soapbox2. Just one word, SOAPBOX2. But yes, Senrio's Jamison Utter joins me now. Jamison, what are you selling us today?
Well, Patrick, I think mostly what we're selling is a visibility and understanding of what's happening on devices on your network that are not traditional. I think there's a bit of a misconception in the market today that the IoT is coming. And my assertion is that it's here. If we look at statistics for devices, they actually outnumber phones and PCs about 4-to-1 in the world. And what does that mean to your average security person? Well, it means they don't generate logs. They don't take clients. They don't have the normal methods of control. So what we're offering is an opportunity to know that they're there, know what they're doing, what they're talking to, and to even generate logs and alerts for devices that are non-traditional.
And you do this without using DPI, right? This is all purely based on metadata.
Yeah, completely. So yeah, our solution's HIPAA compliant and privacy compliant and all that because I don't look into the conversation.
So how is it possible to actually get detailed information on IoTs on your network if you're only looking at metadata?
Lots of times what's happening inside the packet is sort of trivia, and I don't want to make it sound like it's not useful, but what I mean for understanding what's there, what it's talking to, and what its normal parameters are, we just have to establish baselines. And there's a tremendous amount of data contained in the header about that. And it goes beyond endpoint to endpoint. It goes down into packet size and flags, the ports it's communicating on, time of day. There's so much data that we just kind of glean over because we're so focused on tearing the packet apart with DPI, right? And digging into what was the malware signature. Whereas really we ought to be looking at, is it behaving normally or is it not? Then go to the next step, right?
So who are you trying to sell this wonderful snake oil to?
Yeah, so I really feel like our primary market it actually aligns with the IoT well. It's our belief and our experience so far that as more industries become IoT aware, and really the two industries that have developed it the most is energy, so oil, gas, water, utilities, right? People who have lots of automated systems, and hospitals. They have a lot of embedded device systems that are run by people who aren't traditional IT folks. We think that's going to be the trend as we continue to go forward. We're shorthanded in IT today, more shorthanded in IT security. But as we push further and add more and more and more devices, people who are not traditionally IT or security folks will be responsible for maintaining them in some way. So our target is actually operators meaning operators of those devices to receive simple alerts that tell them the device is doing something strange, right? And it could be operational. Maybe the battery's dead, right? And then they would escalate that to teams that have more expertise. So really what we're marketing to is ops teams, MedSec, ClinTech, those sorts of folks that are not your traditional IT shop that understand even what DPI is.
And I believe, because we spoke in the soapbox section recently about this. I mean, one of the whole ideas about this is you don't want to kick these devices off the network and quarantine them, which is the approach of many network defenses when they detect something is up. I mean, really, the idea here is, you keep things on the network. You don't destroy the value proposition of these very expensive things in hospitals. You can keep them working. You can keep them online, but still know when something's gone a bit screwy.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's an important difference in approach that we're trying to retrofit what I would call PC security, which is what we've experienced for the last, 15, 20 years, onto devices that just don't fit that profile. These devices are really kind of unique in that up to now, we've had things that were important to protect, obviously credit card data and people's, records, that's really important. But what's different about the IoT from that is that many IoT devices act on the physical world, right? So a robot is, building a car, or this medical device is pumping oxygen, right? These things talk to flesh directly. And so if they are compromised, it's very bad. Also, security measures that we would typically have taken, quarantining, as you pointed out, right? That sort of stuff can also affect their essential performance. So any solution that we try to put around them for security has to think of their business case first.
So walk us through the solution in terms of, what do you actually get? Say I walk into the Senryo store and I say, I'll have one Senryo, please. What do I actually get and how do I use it?
Yeah, so our deployment's pretty simple. It's a small bit of code that runs really well on a kind of junk routers that you can buy at Office Max. And I say that not because that's what you would use in your enterprise, but it's super lightweight code that you can deploy in a VM, you can deploy on OpenWRT. There's lots of places to put it. Super lightweight sensor. Those are free. So if you need 20 of them because of network divisions or layer 2 boundaries, it's fine. We don't care. All we're using that for is just to collect the data. It strips the metadata tag off the top of the header. and puts it in our format and then inserts it into the database. What you're really paying for is the cloud service. It's a as a service, style menu where you buy the analytics and the data on the back end. So once that data gets pumped up there, then what you're buying is the alerting, the machine learning. Our machine learning is dedicated per device. We make no assumptions or have no signatures, anything like that about any endpoint. We take every endpoint individually, model its traffic, and create a model from that. We learned that from ICSs where you might have a network of thousands of them that are the same model, but they all do different things. So they behave differently. So that's why we built our behavior model. And it's unique. Every endpoint is considered a unique snowflake.
So in terms of installing this thing, it's pretty much just plug your sensors into span ports and away you go.
That's it. Yeah, literally. You just shunt a span port into a sensor and then make sure you're seeing everything you should see. And if you're not, we look for another place in your network where layer two traffic might be split off by a NAT, right?
Oh, one thing I should point out there is you got an API for this stuff, right? So if you want to start shunting the data that you collect and analyze into your SIEM, you can do that as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of our kind of base value props when people ask, like, you know, what could you do for me today if I don't even learn your product? Is I can be the logging system for your IoT, right? I can send data directly over to your SIEM from, like you said, right from our API. Our entire product is API based, so it's literally a platform. The GUI is not some special access. The GUI uses the API. Everything uses the API. Very simple to use web-based API. So that does make the platform really easy to integrate into other solutions.
Now, you don't just do the network side, of course. You've got a whole suite of developer tools for those who manufacture IoT. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so we have a second piece of technology called Senrio Trace. And what Trace beacons do is they allow you to insert this small code into a firmware that will beacon out. And if, you know, kind of at short sight, it doesn't seem that useful, but let me take you through the progression. So if I'm a device maker and I need to answer for what devices I have in the field, what version they might be, and is their firmware okay? I can provide that with Trace. I can tell you that these were this compiled version of firmware, and then you could build a database that says that's assigned to, you know, Susie and Bob. That would allow you to do inventory around the world, anywhere they are connected to the internet. And then I can take Trace to a whole nother level beyond that. I can actually use Trace beacons in the function of a firmware. So typically a device might say, use function A, B, C. And that's how it always works, right? It's whatever it does, these are the typical stops it makes in this firmware execution. If I'm watching with Trace though, I might see one day it does A, B, X, right? And then that's perhaps the shell out or just a crash, right? Something went wrong. But these are things that would be detected by Trace and then reported back into the analytics engine. So I can perform even machine learning on the way that the firmware executes. Now I know that a certain class of machines might be executing strangely.
And this gives you the wonderful ability to ring up Mrs. Jones and say, hey, we've detected something a bit funny with the nightstand, you know, IoT that communicates with your insulin pump. We're going to send someone around to replace it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, to identify exactly who it was and where they were, and then even to begin your process of breaking down what happened in the code. Yeah.
All right, Jamison Utter, people can go and get some more information about all of this stuff at iot.security. Jamison Utter, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Patrick.
That was Jamison Utter there. Head on over to iot.security for more information on Senrio. That is a pretty kick-ass domain name, I reckon, iot.security. And that is it for this first ever edition of Snake Oilers. I do hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. If you'd like to participate in the next Snake Oilers podcast again, please email sales@risky.biz and our commercial manager, Tiran, will provide you with all of the information that you require. Until next time, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.